in the world that you could possibly do is to pick up the phone and call a person whom you don't know and ask them for money. But the truth is over time, a profile gets built on those individuals. If you have a finance staff person, they'll make you aware that, hey, John Doe looks like he gives the Sierra Club and also a big supporter of criminal justice reform because he gives to, whatever democracy project that might be out there. You may not know them, but by reading a little bit about them and their interests kind of gives you a little bit of the courage necessary to pick up the phone and say, hey, John, you've been a supporter of such and such and such, and my position on the environment aligns with what I understand yours to be. And, you know, if you give me this amount, you know, we'll be able to do great things and build a beautiful future, prioritizing the things that both you and I care a great deal about. Those individuals are not unaccustomed to getting phone calls, to being asked for money. If you're nervous or a little bit uneasy about that process, please satisfy yourself by knowing that these people are used to this. And right now, at this stage, expect that if they're going to give money politically to this cause or to this individual candidate, that person or someone from that institution or that effort is going to reach out to them directly and ask them for money. And frankly, would take it as an insult if the ask came through somebody else. The other thing about asking that was really important for me to learn and to understand and to really receive was this notion of respect, that it's respectful to ask someone for their money. I'm not sure respect is what I would have initially associated with it, but in truth, data from fundraising outlets and experts does show that people want to be asked. They want to be asked by the candidate or the person leading the cause or high up in it. And largely don't give significant money, may give $25, $50 here, but are not going to give significant dollars unless they're asked. It's important to know that because it should assuage us a little bit of some of the concern there. But it's really important to be able to raise these resources to get across the finish line on whatever the mission is. People can't work forever for free. There are a lot of folks who want to be in movement-based work, and they're looking for a job full-time. I think as progressives who go around advocating for a higher minimum wage and for health care for all and for the ability for people to work to earn a respectable living for themselves, we can advocate all those things. But then when it comes to asking for us, a candidate, or asking for an organization, we get real shy and we sort of forget about what it means to pay these individuals for their time, energy, effort, when the resources are allocated, and you've got the resources to do that. And so let's just release the burden of shame with fundraising. And I'm still pulling back the layers of mine, but having raised for an organization before in my professional life and for causes, and also raising significant money as a candidate, I will tell you, I always found it easier to raise for a cause, for a purpose, for an organization, at least easier for me making the ask. But in fact, in politics, you're dealing many times with people who are used to being asked and are used to giving. And it's sort of, if you allow yourself, you make a game of the process of the asks and how many ways you might ask in a single call to help that person get to yes. Another misnomer is that people on the other end of the phone, on the other end of your ask, feel like friends. Don't feel like good friends and real friends would be the sort of same individual who would then turn around and ask you for money. I never stumbled on that, but there were a lot of people who were basically like, if I have an authentic, and maybe friends isn't the right word I should use, people with whom they've worked with, have worked for, or they know through some other association and not really a very familiar one, they believe that it might present as insincere a relationship. that the person being asked might conclude that, oh, you're only my friend, or you're only trying to cozy up to me to ask me for my resources, to take something from me. You're an authentic person. You're a real person. You're real wherever you are, I hope. And the same passion you would put into asking for yourself, you would put into asking for a cause. And that's probably the same passion that landed you in relation to this person in the first place. So people are more complex than that, and they also get it. So we've got to let ourselves off the hook. One common mistake that I find when fundraising, especially if you're one of these people who has an ethos or grown up with a habit around not asking and having shame around asking, you talk yourself and you talk the person who you're asking to give out of the gift. I'll give you an example. Hey, Jody, it's been a minute, but I hope you're doing well. Oh, I'm doing well. Yeah, great. I'm not going to do both ways. I'll just do mine. You can assume, plug in what you want. Y'all know how I humor myself, and I'm like humoring myself right now. But Jody, hey, I just wanted to reach out and let you know that I've decided I'm going to run for the local school board and do everything that I can. Jody's probably screaming at this point on the other end while you're still talking. And I would love for you to be one of my early donors to show, you know, your support. Now, Jody, if she's a homegirl, she's probably already screaming and is like, what can I do? All this kind of stuff. But if she's less of that, she's saying, yeah, well, of course. And then you make the amount ask. Or maybe you don't mention a number and you just say, I know times are tough and I know the kids are getting ready to go back to school, or I know summer's coming up and you're going to be paying a lot for those camps. So, you know, you got a lot to think about, but I would really love if you would do this for me. Well, you've already started negotiating against yourself with Jody, telling her all the things she ain't even thinking about right now that may be expense coming up, and giving her all kinds of reasons to either one, not give, or two, to give, which is probably more likely she would, but to give a lesser amount, because all the things you just reminded her are upcoming expenses that she wasn't even thinking about. People know their wallets generally, and they have a general understanding of the capacity that they can give at. A person who knows their financial situation enough is it knows that the most they can give is 50, but you're their friend, they ain't gonna spring for 500. They're probably delusional, because, you know, you got other things you got to do. But generally, a $500 person is not in the same bracket generally with the person who's only got the capacity to give, you know, $25 and may spring for 50. But they're not going to go from 25 to 500 generally. But you talk yourself out of the ask. And one of the habits that I sort of observed, and I've now heard later taught, I wish I had been taught it before I observed it for myself, having run, you know, when I was 23 years old and talked a lot of people out of giving, if not giving generally, certainly giving what they could if they were really stretching themselves. But that habit, that tool was to make the ask, and not just we need you to give money or we want you to give money, but more specific than that, I would love for you to invest in me and in this race and in the future of our state by giving $100 to this effort, you know, in time for our next reporting period at the end of the month, or 500 or 1,000. A lot of times early on, And if you aren't well trained in the art of asking for the gift, you're going to negotiate yourself out of the gift if you keep talking. And so developing a habit of something to do as a distraction from having to keep talking. Silence can be uncomfortable, especially after you didn't ask some people for $8. They're hard-earned money. But you have to force yourself to stop. So to role play this real quick, it would be, you know, and I would really, really appreciate you making a $500 contribution to help us change our state or change our community and make our schools better for our kids. I know you feel like I do about how desperately things need to change. This is a way that we can really do something about it. And if you could make that contribution, firstly, I would be eternally grateful. But secondly, in time for us to report that gift, And our next fundraising report, which would be an impressive display for people to see and to know that you're giving, one, but two, that we're also raising real resources here to make this thing happen. And then stop and take a drink of water. Don't ever go to a fundraising meeting without a bottle of something or a container of something that you can drink, hopefully non-alcoholic, something you can drink as a way of shutting yourself up. And if you don't figure out practice, I mean that, what method you're going to instrument to keep yourself from talking, I would suggest something non-distracting, not like, That's not, you don't do that thing. But maybe a different habit that you might develop. But my habit was taking a drink. So I'd make that ask. I'd say the amount, and I'd say when I'd like to get it. And I appreciate you listening to my vision. Put it down. And by that time, they've already taken up the task of responding. It's either a quick one, yes, I can do that, or no, I can't. But generally, people want to get to yes. And sometimes it's your job to help them get there. So two different potential outcomes aside from the yes scenario might be, I wish I could, but I am, I've decided I think I may stay out of this race. You know, I know a lot of you all in it, and you say, you know, Jim, I understand that. I know you got a lot of friends throughout this race. And I certainly don't want to put you in a position where you're put out by them. And if you cannot find yourself in the course of the race that we're in to invest in me as a candidate, do I understand you're also not going to invest in anybody else? Oh, yeah, if I'm staying out, I'm staying out. I'm not going to. Okay. Have you considered, or maybe perhaps would you consider, what it would mean to maybe make an investment in all of us as a show of support that, you know, hey, you know, you're my friend enough that I will stay out of giving to anyone else in this race. I want to put some money behind you, and I'm going to do the same for a couple of other people, right? So just creating off-ramps. Another off-ramp might be, okay, I understand that $500 is a lot of money. I know. God knows I work hard for every dime that I earn. I'm wondering, do you think it might be possible to do 100 or potentially commit to 100 and over a period of cycles, pay a little bit toward that commitment? Give them the opportunity to respond to that. People don't like silence for a lot of folks, unless you know somebody real well. A lot of folks generally don't vibe well with quiet. We always feel the moment. Use fundraising as an opportunity to not fill the moment with your voice. Your presence ought to be there, but with silence to give the other person the cue that it's now time for them to respond to you. So one way, again, might be, I can't meet that amount as a form of rejection. The form of rejection in this case is, I've got a bunch of people I know, and so the off-ramp you gave is, can you give to all of us? Another potential scenario might be that the amount is too high. We work through that as part of this scenario with the friends. And in that case, again, you can do this sort of step-down, step-off approach. And then, you know, sometimes the opportunity presents itself as the chance to make your case and to make it very directly and strongly. For why a person ought to be behind you or be with you or give to you. And that's the instance where the potential donor says, you know, I'm still sort of taking my time and I'm waiting to see what's going to happen there. I'll get involved at some point, but, you know, right now we're just sort of observing the field. Again, with the spirit of never, ever taking no, or the response that you don't want as the ultimate response, convince yourself that there is always a way to yes. There is always a way to yes. It's just our jobs as those who are going out to try to raise these resources for a cause or for a candidate to be creative enough and confident enough in ourselves, and moreover, confident enough in the work that we are raising for. If it's a mission, you know, have that thing in your spirit, in your soul. It'll power you through a day of 7 hours of phone calls, and every answer is no, right, as the example I gave. But you ought to feel strongly enough about the thing you're raising for that you'll be willing to go the extra step of being creative to help facilitate somebody getting to the answer yes. I want to invite Lolo in, our sister Lolo. Lolo, I'd love to, if you're able to join, I'd love if you're able to monitor whether there are any questions or anything like that, or if in the course of listening here, I'm assuming you was listening, in the course of listening here, that maybe there are some angles here that I didn't go down that you think in the few moments we have remaining are worthwhile to do. What's up, Lolo?
Hi, y'all. We actually have some really good questions. We got a few. So I'm going to start off with the first one, and it is, how do you create a leaderless organization? I think that this is not very specific. We do have some that are specific to the fundraising aspect, but I've seen this one. It was one of the first ones, and it was like, how do you create a leaderless organization? Also one that is completely transparent.
Oh, what did you say before being completely transparent?
Also, it's just also one that is completely transparent.
Right, that it is without a leader and that your intention is not to listen, this is actually a really layered and complex question when you get at it. We've been having in Native Land Pod a bit of a conversation around who is our leader, you know, in circumstances. Who are we following? I don't feel like there's anybody, you know, that kind of thing. And I sort of like to introduce into the conversation that there are a lot of models of organizations and even of governing bodies that operate without a known leader, a singular known leader, I should say. Leadership exists, but a singular known leader. And I'm actually an advocate for that. I think we've gotten a little bit too Western in our styles that we think we need a person, Donald Trump, a cult of personality to follow. We don't. And part of the way through that is one to believe is to get a sense of if everybody agrees that we need to be individual, leaderless and rather a council. That is an important decision that must be bought into by the people who are engaged and involved. Once you get beyond the buy-in, you could create a panel of individuals. You can create rotating leadership that is not by volunteerism, but by lot, which is if you're involved in this, just know one day when we roll the dice, you may be the one who's up here leading. And that, again, requires a lot of trust that people have the skill sets to do what is required. But there are a lot of models to do that. And I can't get through all of them, but I wanted to at least share one example there. Sorry about that. Go ahead, Lo.
No, that was good. I was surprised that was your answer.
Oh, really? You thought that? I think people are fallible. We're imperfect. And a lot of times this sort of cult of an individual's personality weds us to a lot of things that if we had our druthers, our choices, we wouldn't be wed, you know, to those things. Or it is when that person disappoints us, the movement starts to come apart because they've made him priest and pope and not person, or they've made her priest and pope and not person. They're persons. And if everybody understands that and is willing to ride like that, then cool. But in other instances, it might be helpful for people to be wedded to the cause, wedded to the thing that you're on and not to an individual.
Yeah. One of the other questions that we had is, how would you recommend building a donor list? Actually a question I had about that too.
Okay, yeah, I didn't get to get into list building and that kind of thing, and especially with individual candidates, but also organizationally, where does the information come from? Especially if you've never raised money before, right? So here it is. This is the era of big information, big technology, big government, big everything. You can now purchase these lists from organizations. You can purchase them from companies. These are ready-made lists that exist in the broader fundraising spectrum, where people collect data on everybody who's given to environmental organization X, the Sierra Club. You can see everybody who's given to NAACP based off of tax filings and that sort of thing. But the information gets culled for you. And all you got to do is go through and you say, oh, man, if they gave to Jesse Jackson Jr., they might be the kind of donor who would be interested in giving to me. If they gave to Kamala Harris out in California, and also to Cory Booker, and also to Reverend Warnock, it seems to me this might be the type of person who likes to give to individuals who are people of color who are not usually elected to these large bodies of government, and that makes a good donor. But your fundraising person, or you, if you're the person and you don't have that, can of course search where you can purchase these lists and make that decision. I will tell you, in the race for governor, initially that thing began with whoever I had in my cell phone or an email I had an address for, but the friends and family network was the first ask that I made, and it is the most important ask you can make, and one that will largely power you up until the point that you've got to broaden out and expand the amount of money that you're raising. But those lists exist, they can be bought, and you can then across a set of criteria determine who are the best fits for you, and either make those phone calls, send those emails, or put them on your mail program where they would give the money themselves directly.
Okay, Andrew, I'm gonna ask one more question. I know we had more, but I think some of your answers is kind of like answering some of the other ones.
Got it.
So
her way of telling me I'm talking too much. I love it.
So no, it's not. This is actually really good information. but so Kaya says, how do you assuage people's new fear of retaliation? So she said, I'm finding that during phone banking and VA lately, that people are becoming more hesitant to even reveal their political views over the phone.
Oh, so true. Or period, where that information can then be tracked back to them, right? And this is the real chilling effect and lasting effect of what Trump is demonstrating at the federal level, that if you cross me, Harvard University, I'm taking all $50 million away. If individual X decides to sue me, I'm going after your sister, your brother, your cousin, and them, and all of them are going to have problems with ICE, right? And bless the court that can force me to bring them back, right, after I've sent them away. So there is this real legitimate fear, because it's not just at the federal level. Conservatives and Trumpers all around the country are taking note, and in places where they have the ability, they're trying to extract the exact same kind of penalties that he's illustrating at the federal level that you can do and get away with. So I would say, one, it's really hard to completely cover the fears of someone who is afraid of being doxxed or being come after if they give. I'm guessing if you're calling from a list of either people you know or people who you don't know but have demonstrated record of giving before, they will already have an appetite to push through, because they would be more accustomed to it anyway. Not knowing your specific situation, your proximity to Washington, D.C., being in Virginia, probably makes this more pronounced for you, given the number of employees who are federal workers and also reside in Virginia. So I want to acknowledge the adjacency issue that you got, and why that feels more pronounced for you than not. Generally, I think people will get over that fear with a little bit of, you realize that, you know, they're probably not looking at this list at our level, or they're, you know, this is that and the third. And obviously I would never ask you to do anything that will put you personally in harm's way. And if you feel strongly enough that showing your support for me in this race could make you available to personal attack from the government or retribution, I don't want to put you in that position. That's your first answer, is you don't want to go there. Large people, my guess is the majority will say, you know, it was put well. I'm not afraid enough of you and giving to you that people are going to come after me. I think I can get over that. Yeah, I'll give. I think the majority of respondents are probably going to be that way than they would, yeah, it's just too rough right now, little person that I am, that everybody's tracking me, right? But in some places, it's really real, and retribution is real. They're going to do what they're going to do. I would make the effort to first say what you really mean, which is your intention is not to get anybody in trouble. And if that causes that big a concern for you, I'm not going to ask you to give to me. But in most cases, I think they will. If it persists as an issue and this is a big enough donor, you also have the option of directing them to give to an organization that is in support of you, or to a organization or an arm of a fundraising organization that you may have access to where their information is protected. And for those of y'all who are screaming right now, I know I am talking about 527s and those kinds of political organizations that conceal the giving of their donors. It is a weapon that the other side uses, and I'm just not a big fan of unilaterally disarming and allowing folks to come at me with everything they have with my hands tied behind my back. It's not an option.
Mm-hmm. Well, Andrew, this is really good. It's up to you, because I know Nick is probably like, y'all are over time.
I know we got to wrap.
But there was like one question please. That we just got, and I thought it was a really good question.
Oh, please.
Okay, well, Nick says we good. So we're going to do one more question. How do you counsel yourself to not take the no's personally, especially if it comes from personal contacts, not typical donors?
So tough. It is. It's a head fake. I'm going to admit that straight up. I live in a government town, and so a lot of people who I know personally and have personal relationships with me, with Jay, with our family, work either in the government or adjacent to it, or our friends with people who are political. And so I'm accustomed to the kind of response of, you know, oh, I wish I could, but I, you know, so on and so forth. The way I sort of mind trick myself is to basically remind myself it ain't personal for those individuals. It is personal for me. I wouldn't put myself out there if I didn't feel it. But I realize that everyone does not have the freedom. I want to underline that word, freedom, to move the way they want to move, that if they had their druthers, they would move. Everybody's not free. In fact, the overwhelming majority of us are not free. We're tethered to something that causes us to have to question a thing when the going gets tough. And so know that they're not trying to put you off, but are frankly, they're tending to their home needs, their personal needs first. And I don't think any of us could reasonably expect people not to. Now, I will also say that there are some folks who are maybe not friends, wouldn't do this to you, but are associates who might reach for that excuse, even when that excuse, frankly, doesn't apply very neatly to their situation. And if you know that, you can go the approach of navigating another set of asks that can get them to yes. A lower ask, a different amount, a different way or instrument, or whether or not you want to trade that ask amount for time or talent. Those folks, I would probably say create another option for them to be supportive. But people who you legit believe are conflicted right that way, don't take it personal. It happens. And you just got to keep moving. God knows those days that were 7 hours long, and I couldn't, no matter how good the conversation went, how many times they agreed with me, and by agreeing with me was basically disagreeing with the person who they were going to be giving to or had given to, because that person didn't believe like I did. Those are really difficult days. Those are difficult calls, and those are difficult moments. But if I allowed myself to be tripped up on it, I would have been, you know, half the amount effective in future calls, because the thing about these calls is your confidence needs to be intact. Whether that is the confidence around the movement you're raising for, or confidence around yourself as a candidate or on behalf of the candidate, your confidence is what's going to power you through that call. And your confidence is what's going to give you all those options that come to mind as another way for the person to contribute or to give. But if you're down, you might hear that no, and you'll be like, I understand. I really appreciate you taking my call and taking up 30 minutes of my time agreeing and then not giving. I really do. I'm being facetious.
I was about to say. But the way you say it is so, like, I'm taking notes, like, I'm going to do this next time.
Oh, God. All 30 minutes, because we could have covered this at moment one. You knew I was calling
you. You literally could have told me that 30 seconds in. Like, you know what? I'm going to stop you there.
Oh, before you go on, I just want to say, I'm behind such and such in this race. We can get through that. But 30 minutes? Anyway.
You know what's so funny, Andrew, real quick while we're ending this. A lot of people don't know this, but in my previous life, I had started an organization. It's actually still around, been around for about 6 years now, and I had to do fundraising in the organization. And so a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, I'm like, oh, I remember those days.
Oh, I'm telling you. It's
or
a trip.
Or you go to someone's event, or, you know, just all of the things that you have to do. But you can't take this stuff personal.
No,
somebody told me that people who know you personally usually are sometimes the last people to come around.
Sometimes. Now, that's going to be another conversation than the general donors we're talking about. But we're going to have a conversation, those longtime friends, associates, family members. I definitely got some messed up cousins. Still waiting for that check, by the way. Anyway, but who? You know, folks who, as the saying goes, I'll say this, Lolo. The saying is, it's hard to be a prophet in your own land.
Ooh.
Which is, you're preaching the same thing at home that you're out there preaching on the road. But it seems like the people on the road can hear what you're saying, you know, and credit you for the gift you got. But at home, you just a little, you know, you're just another, you know, whatever. So it's hard to be a prophet in your own land, and fundraising can be that way sometimes. People are slow to give until they see that others are willing to do the same without relationship to you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I just want to say this because we actually are starting to get more questions in. Like, people are really interested in this topic, but we're not going to.
Well, you know, a phase two possibly might be how we deal more specifically in the organizational side. Some of the technocratic kinds of things that go into getting yourself ready for fundraising, because there are some things that I just really skipped over out of the interest of trying to be brief here. But fundraising is something you must master if you're going to be in this space for yourself as a candidate or for a cause. You want to master that.
So what I will say for the immediate people who are watching this, if you all have a specific question and you want to continue this conversation, I'm going to give you a soft plug. If you are not following us on Instagram, go to our Instagram at Native Land Pod. And if you record a quick 60 second video, it could be less than that. Try not to make it more than 90 seconds. And send it to us in our DMs. We like to include those questions on the regular show.
Yeah.
So this could be a conversation for the regular show. I see that there were some questions. I'm like, oh, that was really good. Like Meek asked a question. Please submit that question to us on our Instagram. Do you have some parting words, Andrew?
Do y'all see what Lolo just did? Y'all just got co-opted. She's not taking no for an answer. This is just because we can't do it now. There are other ways in which you can do it, but she tried to co-opt you into a video for the main show that we record each week. But please do that. But also, if you want to communicate those questions in this chat, we'll capture them. And in the future episodes, maybe what we'll do is just start at the questions. And if there's time remaining, then make a pitch on one of the points around organizing and raising.
Love it.
And my sign off is, you got to go where the money reside. Where the money reside, where the money reside. Give me that money, that dodo.
All right. 2 weeks from now, meet us not the next Monday, but the Monday after that.
That's it. That's it. See y'all soon. Welcome home, y'all.
Welcome home.
Native Land Pod is a production of iHeartRadio in partnership with Reason Choice Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The future depends on teachers. Every day, teachers are shaping our tomorrows, starting their students on journeys that will change the course of history. Right now, in a classroom somewhere in the United States, there's a teacher inspiring a future scientist who will make preventing pandemics their life's work, sharpening the mind of an aspiring environmentalist who will help combat climate change, and generating possibilities for a student who will be the first in their family to graduate college. It all starts with teachers who meet challenges with creativity, who reinvent education for the future, who work towards a school system that lifts up every child, regardless of race, income, or zip code, and to enable the full potential of our students, our communities, and our country. Explore a career that leaves a legacy you can be proud of. Shape the future. Teach. Learn more and receive free support at teach.org.
Hi. What kind of help does the IRS have for identity theft victims?
If you suspect you're a victim of tax-related identity theft, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn how to prevent potential refund fraud and protect your tax account. At the IRS, combating tax-related identity theft is a top priority, and we are committed to prevention, detection, and assisting victims. And we're working with law enforcement to catch the criminals. For more info, go to irs.gov/identity theft to learn what the IRS is doing to help protect you.
Yeah. Choice to make it. dancing to you. I can't see through you like I usually can. But it's just something about the things you do to me. You keep me places I know ain't supposed to be. Yes, I'm chasing, slick complacent. Maybe don't be so basic, but I still taste it. I need a breath to get home with you. I need a smell.
To vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
I need you. is a morbid symptom. The real issue is the economic and political system of this country, and that's called capitalism. This is an issue of reorganizing society. Because right now, in this shift that is happening, where the world